This is On Your Money. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine with financial planner Kevin McKinley. And you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, November 6th. Election Day 2012. Happy voting day to you. You can catch the results in our election night special tonight on Wisconsin Public Radio. And you can catch us tomorrow morning for reaction and analysis. Today, we'll steer clear of politicking and talk about our personal finances. If you have a money question for Kevin, call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money LLC. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Joy.
What are we going to talk about if we don't talk about the election and politics?
Well, we did a survey and we asked around to our listeners and we said, do you need more information on the election, on the issues, on the voting, on the polls, on the politicians? And we got a resounding no. Everyone said, we're good, thanks. So instead, we're going to talk about something that people value more than love, more than money, more than success, more than good looks, more than fame, sleep.
Yeah, and we just fell back to standard time, didn't we?
That's right, and this may be an opportunity for us. The same gentleman who brought us daylight savings time may also have words of wisdom which cause us to get hopefully help us get a little bit better sleep, which could lead to better health, less stress. It can help you improve your financial situation, and more importantly, a bad night's sleep can lead to a downward cycle in many important aspects of our life, keeps making things worse in health and in life relations and in finances.
Well, I know that sleep is very near and dear to me, and sometimes I get worried because there are some specific health issues associated with getting a good night's sleep or a lack of it.
That's correct. Besides just the bad mood you're in when you don't get a good night's sleep.
What?
I can't tell the difference with you when you're in a bad mood or not.
No.
About 20% of all car accidents are related to drowsy drivers. The University of Alabama, Birmingham did a study that found that a lack of sleep can lead to an increased risk of stroke. The Mayo Clinic found that people who slept 80 minutes less than a control group ate 549 calories more per day, and as people gain weight and eat more, that leads to being overweight, leads to less quality sleep and less ability to sleep through the night. And also depression has a self-fulfilling prophecy as well. If you're depressed and you have a hard time sleeping, you can become more depressed whatsoever, and you sleep less on top of it.
Well, and I have heard about those very sad consequences, but I haven't heard about the financial connections to sleep.
Well, it is, according to Manila.com and several other organizations who have asked, which have asked people, what is keeping you up at night? Money worries are the number one thing that people cite of keeping them up at night. And Dr. Elliot Friedman from the University of Wisconsin found a correlation that people who have higher incomes often have better sleep. Now, there could be, first of all, a chicken and the egg there, and second of all, there might be an issue of saying people who have higher incomes generally have better health, and that's why they're sleeping better. But a Harvard Medical School study found that workers who are not sleeping well cost their employers $2,000 to $3,000 in lost productivity every single year, and the Journal of Neuroscience published a study that they said sleep-deprived people make bad financial decisions when compared to those who have had a good night's sleep.
So how can we use daylight saving time to improve our health and our financial situation?
Benjamin Franklin, who came up with the notion of daylight savings time, for better or for worse, also had the phrase, early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. We have not been able to find any research that says people who get up early make more money, but they are more productive, according to a University of Texas study, and they do report higher levels of happiness. So your body clock is still on the old time. We remember we had to fall back. I hope you did that early Sunday morning there. So use this opportunity. Rather than moving your body clock up to the chronological clock, start getting up early and, more importantly, getting to bed early. Get a ritual going at night so you skip the screens, read a book and magazine. No exercise, alcohol, or food at least 3 hours before you go to sleep. If you're going to exercise, which you should to get a good night's sleep, try to do it in the morning. People who do that tend to sleep better at night. And also, do not hit the snooze alarm. People who hit the snooze alarm don't get very much quality sleep in those last 10 or 5 minutes of sleep, but they do sleep less and not as well the next night. So set your alarm, and as tough as it is in the morning, get up when it says to get up.
Kevin McKinley is the managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. You should consult with your financial advisor prior to making any investment decisions. That being said, if you have a question for Kevin, you can call us at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. And it is time now for the On Your Money email bag. And Mike in Bruce says, my wife is looking to retire at about 60 years old. She's now 53. Once she reaches 60, she'll need a single health insurance policy for 5 years until Medicare kicks in. What's your suggestion on the best way to save for this? A health retirement account, a Roth IRA for this purpose, or Kevin, what?
This is a very common problem with people who have diligently saved and been very fortunate and have realized that they actually can retire on a pure income and asset basis before the traditional age of, you know, say 64 or 65. But the problem with that is they realize they don't have any health insurance before Medicare kicks in at age 65. So they have to go search for health insurance on their own. But we may have some good news for Mike and his wife and people in this same situation.
What's the good news?
Well, if the Affordable Care Act is allowed to stand, 2014, there are going to be state-run health exchanges which could allow people to purchase their own health insurance at competitive rates with less regard to their own health history and conditions than what might have been the case a few years ago. And in fact, for people who aren't covered, you may be penalized if you don't purchase your own. You can find out more information about the law itself at healthcare.gov, and that's a website that we will have up at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
What should Mike and his wife do in the meantime?
I would definitely like them to save as they normally would into a pre-tax retirement plan like a 401k or a 403b, and using the Roth IRA is a good idea if they can afford it as well. But if Mike's wife's employer offers a high deductible plan with an HSA, a healthcare savings account, that not only will reduce her premiums, but it will reduce her taxes because the money that goes into the HSA is deferred from taxes and can be pulled out tax-free to pay for health insurance on her own in between now and when Medicare kicks in. Another kind of non-traditional solution to their situation is a traditional solution for On Your Money listeners, and that is to get a new mortgage now or at least a home equity line of credit. Then, if for whatever reason Mike and his wife are not covered by health insurance, or they have something, a condition that is not covered by health insurance, they'll at least have cash that they can pay a check for when the time for treatment comes. And finally, people who are in this situation and are concerned about running out of health care coverage before Medicare kicks in should definitely talk with their doctor, and any procedures that can be done while they're on their insurance should be done. So make sure you take that opportunity now while you have it.
I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, and this is an Election Day edition of On Your Money. But we are not talking politics, no electioneering. We are, though, inviting you to join us with any personal finance questions that you might have today. 1-800-642-1234. We have an open line for you for your question about money matters, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. And our first caller is George in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, George.
Hello. How are you this morning?
Very good. How are you?
I'm good. I have a question for Kevin. Say, my wife and I just received a large sum of money from royalties, unexpectedly from some oil wells that she has partners of from Texas. And we were just wondering, is there any way to defer or pay less taxes on that royalties that we're going to get on that?
Are you and your wife working, George, outside the home?
Well, we were until we received the royalties.
Okay. Are these kinfolk of yours who have moved to Beverly Hills by any chance?
They now call me Jed.
The only way someone in your situation, I assume you've already received the check, right, and put it in your bank account?
Yeah, they come every month.
Oh, great. Good problem to have. But
yeah, I know.
Other than the normal traditional ways of deferring income, and especially when you're on this far, you're this far removed from control over when the checks are distributed, other than, you know, taking investment losses, contributing to any pre-tax plans, once you actually get the check, there are very few ways to actually avoid the taxes on it while also keeping the money. You know, you can always give it away to a qualified charity, and that'll give you not only a great tax break, but you can help someone in need out. But it also means you're giving the money away, which kind of defeats the purpose of at least what you're trying to accomplish. So, you know, offhand, the traditional ways of avoiding taxes are the only ways of doing it for someone in your situation.
Well, is there any way in which, I mean, what would be the percentage of the amount of money that I should give away to a charity?
Well, you should give it away to whomever or whatever qualified organization you can, but even then, when you give it away, you don't get an entire tax break on it. You just get a small percentage break, usually about a third or so, depending on it, is reduced. Like if you give $10,000 and you qualify and the organization qualifies, you might be able to reduce your taxable income by, you know, $3,000 or something. So even then, you can definitely give it away, but the tax break would not be enough to offset the entire taxability of the income unless you gave it all away.
All right, George, thanks very much for the call. Good luck to you. I think that's the first time we had a call about something like that during On Your Money. We can welcome your question, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine with financial planner Kevin McKinley, and this is On Your Money on the Ideas Network. Did you know that On Your Money is repeated weeknights on Tuesdays at 9 o'clock? Well, it won't be tonight because it's election night. We will have election night coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio on the Ideas Network, actually starting at 6 tonight with a special call-in from WNYC Radio. NPR will continue with an hour of expert political analysis on the national scene. Then at 8 o'clock, Wisconsin Public Radio will bring you results, candidate interviews, and much more throughout the night. Special election coverage tonight on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with financial planner Kevin McKinley. Our number, and we have one open line, if you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Alice in Fitchburg is with us. Hi, Alice.
Hi. Thank you so much for having something that's not political. My anxiety level is off the roof. So, but anyway, I do have a question. I'm one of those people that's fairly fortunate. I have $50,000 in my my savings account, and of course, we know what kind of interest that's drawing. And I also have money in the stock market, and I have a broker that I like. And but in the bank the other day, I had one of the people, their money manager, say to me, you know, you could invest $5,000 or $10,000 of the 50 and put it in a CD that is only for people that are going to put that much in. That's going to be like for 6 years. And it's guaranteed to be 2.5%, which is a lot more than I'm getting right now on my savings account. And the penalty is really you just lose your interest. And I do like the idea of having some liquidity because I never know when something might happen. Or would it be better for me to put that money in my stock portfolio?
That's a good question. I'm curious about this 2.5% CD, as probably are many of the listeners who are searching for safe money, because that's actually not only a competitive rate, that rate is something that I have not seen on a national basis in a long time. And, in fact, it's high enough where it actually leads me to believe that it may not even be a certificate of deposit.
Well, no, because they do invest it in stocks. I think I misspoke.
Okay, that's I'm actually happy and sad to hear that. I'm happy that that it's actually not a CD. I haven't missed something out there, but also I'm sad because They've obviously confused somewhat a very obviously bright person like you, Alice, in that. And my thoughts to you are that, especially at this time in the world, one of the big risks many people make right now is trying to earn more money on something and taking a lot more risk and not realizing that they are taking more risk. So if you want to put it into, you know, the stock market, do that, but know that you could lose 20 to 30% on that in a given year, and it wouldn't surprise me or anyone else who's paying attention at all. So if you're comfortable with that risk and you're going to try to get a better long-term rate of return, great. Otherwise, if you say, well, I don't want to just leave it there, I would actually try to search out a real certificate of deposit. Go back to the bank and say, hey, I know, you know, you're always trying to get me to take out loans and invest in annuities and everything, but I've heard banks and credit unions actually do sometimes offer real certificates of deposit. Do you, and what are the current rates? And if you like what you see there, Alice, great, go ahead and get the CD. But if you don't, you might want to shop around. And we'll put up a link to the website at onyourmoney.com that has a couple search engines where you can look for higher-yielding CDs around the country. I'm glad to hear you pay very close attention to the penalties for early withdrawal, because that's usually the most important factor when choosing a CD after you've figured out one that's got a high yield. And I would also go to one of our favorite investments for safety and some income, and that is Series I savings bonds that you can purchase directly online at treasurydirect.gov. The rates are reset, Alice, every May 1st and November 1st, and they did just go down a little bit here a couple days ago, but they're still pretty good relative to other very safe investments. They're paying about 1.76%. The bad news is you can only put $10,000 per year per person into those Series I savings bonds. So if you're going to be safe, stick with the CDs and the savings bonds.
Okay. Well, right. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Alice, very much for the call. Now we go to Tim in Oshkosh. Hi, Tim.
Yes, hi there. See, I'm 24 years old and trying to get my Roth IRA funded and going, and so far it doesn't have a whole lot in it, but the couple of mutual funds that I've picked, at least short-term-wise, not done very well. Obviously, I don't need the money for quite a while, but I'm curious if there's a couple of kind of highlights I should look at when choosing mutual funds, or if I should, for now, stick with stocks, be a little risky early on, or I guess kind of your take on that from a young person trying to get their IRA funds.
Yeah, Tim, good for you and good for having the Roth IRA. I would say one thing that I found that makes people more likely to be financially independent later in life is when they start out early in life like you have, not necessarily in what they invest in, but the fact that they do invest at all. So good for you. Tim, is the Roth IRA something you control yourself? Is it at a financial services firm, or where is it?
Yeah, it's something I control just with an online broker.
Okay. I would look with the online broker. Good for you. These are fine to do. But look at if you want something that you don't want to have to do a lot of activity with, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later in the show, but target date mutual funds, lifestyle mutual funds typically have some kind of year in the name, like 2050. And what that connotes is that you'll start out now with a portfolio that's very heavy into stocks and stock mutual funds and some bond mutual funds and a little bit of liquidity in the form of cash. But as the year in question, say 2050, draws nearer, the portfolio automatically becomes a little more conservative every single year. So you don't have to do a lot of the work of trying to decide about, you know, should I be in growth, bonds, whatever. It kind of is like an autopilot, whereas you're more likely to need the money in retirement, the fund automatically gets a little closer. And Vanguard and a few other firms offer some low-cost versions of this that are really nice ideas for people in your situation. And again, it's very important that you concentrate first on saving and second on investing. So the fact that you're putting any money at all aside in the Roth IRA is a good sign for you.
And is there something like that, you think, on, like, I think I'm on Scottrade. Is that something they would offer, or?
Yeah, you can purchase just about any kind of investment within that Roth IRA through Scottrade or whomever, right?
Okay.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, I mean, I can get stocks and CDs and treasury bonds, yeah, and all that kind of stuff.
If you can do that, and you, if you go to their website, I'm sure they have interest information on things like target date funds. If you type it in the search box in the at the company's website, they'll spit back a list of funds that you can pick of, and just start with one. Say, all right, I feel like I'm retiring at 60, so I'm going to pick one that has a year in which you will actually turn 60, It'll sound like a long ways off, but trust me, from people who are a little older than you, Tim, that year will come much faster than you think.
Yes, thank you, Tim, for the call, and good for you. Boy, 24 years old, and he's doing this already. Dan in Appleton is with us now. Hi, Dan.
Hi. My son and I are heading down to the University of Wisconsin-Madison to check it out. He's hopefully going to be a student there, and my wife and I are looking at refinancing our home with a 30-year fix and using some of that money for his college, and wondering, would it be better to refinance before the 1st of January or after in terms of tax implications?
Well, first of all, good for you and your son. I am a very proud graduate of the University of Wisconsin. They're not proud that I graduated from it, but I am proud to have graduated from it. I'm also happy, Dan, to hear that you are at least considering refinancing your mortgage to scare up some money to pay for it. He will be going in the fall of 2013 if all things go according to plan.
Okay. Correct.
It's a good question, and the reason being, do you have a substantial amount of equity in your home that you would be cashing out of?
Yeah, we've got a fair amount, yeah, I guess.
Okay. The reason I ask that is because when you fill out financial aid, first of all, people should apply for federal financial aid if they are going to college or any type of higher education, and they should do it as quickly after January 1st of the year in which that they're going to school. So you're right on track, and you want to go to fafsa.ed.gov. Okay, good. The second thing about it, the reason that I'm curious about the amount and the timing is not so much about the tax issues, but it's about the fact that this cash that you get out of this may qualify or may reduce how much family need-based aid that you're awarded. But typically, a school like Madison doesn't award a ton of need-based aid. It's more merit-based, and even then, it's often the aid that is awarded is in the form of loans. So I don't think you're going to be in a situation where the timing of it is a big deal for actually getting the money. You probably, even if you do it today, this can take a long time to get through the process. And we're only about 6 weeks away from January 1st, and we've got several holidays in the meantime here. So I would start the process now. I would get 80% of the loan to value, meaning if your house is worth $200,000 and the bank will give you $160,000, you should take it. You should get a 30-year mortgage, and you should pay it back as slowly as possible. Just keep the cash on hand in the money market, in the CDs. And I would also, Dan, just out of a side note, borrow money first, especially the federal student loans. Even if you have the money from the mortgage, I would rather have you borrow money first and use the savings last rather than the other way around. And if your son not only gets into Madison but gets out with a degree, you can always use that excess money to pay off those loans. But if for something comes up in your family, or maybe those loans aren't as available at as attractive terms as they are right now, you'll be very glad you got them while you could.
Very good. Thank you much. Go Badgers.
Go Badgers. Thank you, Dan, and good luck to your son, too. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, Managing Member of McKinley Money, LLC. If you have a question, a personal finance question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. It's time now for our Smart Assets segment of the show, and we've been spending a few weeks, and we'll spend a few more weeks, on saving for retirement with a plan at work. And Kevin, this week we will discuss which investments are better than others. Can't wait.
Yep, and this is very tricky because your situation definitely will vary and may not apply to these recommendations. And even if today you said, yes, this is the right investment recommendation for me at this time, times change, your situation changes, so what's right for you today may not be right for you tomorrow. So with all expectations and hopes diminished completely, let's talk a little bit about a recap from our previous week. We've basically divided investments and retirement plan investing into three categories: liquid, income, and growth. Liquid is basically savings, checking accounts, money markets. Income is things that provide income. And growth, finally, are all our stock-based mutual funds and things that move around a lot and hopefully might provide a greater rate of return down the road. Liquid, you should have about 1 year's worth of living expenses in that category. You might want to have 2 to 3 years worth of living expenses in income. And if you have money left over, you can put it in the growth, but again, only if you not only need growth, but can also stand the volatility that is certain to come.
Okay, so what are the preferred liquid investments that are usually available in an at-work retirement plan?
The money market is usually the go-to option, and that's okay, but it doesn't pay anything. And just because your money market doesn't pay anything, it doesn't mean it's a bad one. Money markets, by definition, right now, do not pay anything at all in terms of yield. Also, there's some question as to what is actually in that money market account, and usually you don't find out that there's something bad in there until something bad happens. So if you have the option within your plan, some people have an FDIC-insured fixed account in there that's kind of like a certificate of deposit within your at-work plan. Not everyone has it. If you do, you're fortunate, and if you do, you should use that, usually instead of a money market account, or you might have a self-directed option. Some employers say you can spin off of our roster and go into your own self-directed plan. If you do have that, CDs might be a little bit better than a money market account.
And what about the income portion?
Bond funds are extremely popular right now. Many millions of investors around the country are concerned about the stock market, want to get a little bit of return on their retirement money, and are shoving it into bond funds. That's a fine idea as long as nothing bad happens. But if interest rates go up, those bonds may lose money. And if the rates go up a lot, the bonds may lose a lot of money. Or if the economy does get worse, those bond issuers within the bond mutual fund may have a difficult time paying off on their securities. So, again, the bond funds may lose value. Instead, you might want to look at a stable value option within your retirement plan roster or a fixed rate or guaranteed account where they pay you a nominal interest rate. Maybe it's 2 or 3%. It's often sponsored by an insurance company. It still has some risks, but in most situations, these types of options are going to be less volatile than bond funds will be and maybe more likely to give your money back when you need it.
All right, and then last but not least, the growth option.
Only if you need it and can tolerate it. These are stock funds. Many people make a mistake of not paying attention to the expenses within their mutual funds. They end up paying more for the funds than they need to. You might want to look at low-cost index funds first. Again, we alluded to the Vanguard funds before when Tim called. And much like we told Tim, target date funds offer you a diversified portfolio that gradually gets more conservative as the year in the target date's name comes closer. So if you don't like monkeying around with all this stuff, you want some growth and you can handle some volatility and you want it to become more conservative as you're more likely to need the money, target date funds and lifestyle funds can be a good way to go.
Kevin McKinley is the managing member of McKinley Money LLC and a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. If you have a question for him, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Mike in Delavan is with us. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Hey, here's my situation. I changed careers recently. I'm actually currently in higher ed, making about $50,000 a year. I have $20,000 in a 403B and my retirement, my pension. I'm 50 years old, and that's all I got. I'm wondering what your magic ball says at this point. Wondering if maybe a 401k, a Roth with maybe a gold and silver, something like that might be a good way to go.
Congratulations on your career change, Mike. I'm not a huge fan of gold and silver as an initial investment for many people. Are you single or married, Mike?
Married.
Married. Okay. Does your wife work outside the home?
Yes.
Okay. What I would do is, rather than which vehicle, I would have you predicate your decision on which tax bracket you will be at a certain point. And most people should contribute to pre-tax retirement plans like 403Bs and 401Ks and tax-deductible IRAs until they get their income down below the top of the 15% bracket, and that's the number on line 43 of your 1040. And for 2012, for married couples filing jointly, that number is $70,700. That's line 43 on the second page of the 1040. Married couples filing jointly, it's $70,700. Singles, it's half of that amount. If you can keep contributing to the pre-tax plan at least until you get to that amount, you save about 20 to 30 cents in taxes on every single dollar you get into that plan. After that amount, if you still have money you and your wife can set aside, then you can switch to the Roth IRA. And once you're over 50, you contribute up to $6,000 per person per year. And the nice thing about the Roth IRA is you don't get a tax break, but you can pull the contributions back out whenever you want. So it can kind of serve as an ersatz savings account for you while you're also building up for retirement. So get down to the 15% tax bracket with your pre-tax plans, then switch over to the Roth IRA.
Good luck, Mike. Thanks for the call. Tom in Hill Point is with us next. Hello, Tom.
Good morning. Good morning. Kevin, I have a question about fees. You were just talking about fees, and my wife and I are invested in a 457 retirement plan in a large public institution whose name I will not say over the air, but it has a stable value fund, which seems quite attractive now for less risk. But in the past year, its fees have gone from 0.17% to 0.37%, and I've written them, and I said, who decided you could do this, and where does the money go? And I really haven't gotten a suitable response.
Really?
That is true. And I'm very upset about it, because it really makes a lot, it's a huge difference in how much blood we lose.
Yeah, it does. I'll say this. You're not alone, first of all. Second of all, I'm sorry for your personal experience with this. I'm kind of glad, because if they were going to address each of the millions and millions of people within that 457 plan, your expenses on it would be even higher than they are right now. So I'm not surprised that they didn't respond back to you. But what they probably did was send you a prospectus and a notice saying, we're going to do this, we have no choice. And typically, stable value accounts are actually something that are very difficult to find outside of an employer's retirement plan. So does the fee within there, does it still net out a yield of like 2 or 3% or something?
The yield has actually gone down, and that's my biggest gripe.
Well, and that's something that we don't have a lot of control over, because, the 30-year Treasury now pays around 3%. And if you check CD rates and other safer investments, you'll find that they're closer to 1%, even if you're willing to go out several years. So there's nothing they can do with the fee. And in fact, Tom, it would actually concern me if you said, hey, Kevin, I have this really great stable value fund. It's paying me 4%. I would say, well, I don't know how they're doing this, because that's too good to be true. And they're probably taking a lot more risk with that money than they should. So the fact that you actually do have a low yield on that stable value account, Tom, is a good sign for it relative to everything else out there.
Okay, I will hold my nose and keep giving them my money.
Tom, thank you so much for the call. Carol in Oconomowoc is with us next. Hello, Carol.
Hello. My question is about who to choose as a financial advisor. I currently have a financial advisor who is affiliated with I don't know what it's called, but it's LPL. It's like a limited advisory organization where they make investments in their own, portfolio. Mm-hmm. And then my other choice would be an independent, which is a financial investment agent that's part of the Baird organization. And I just wondered if you could compare and contrast the difference, because one person is showing me the expenses are lower with theirs, and the other person is saying, oh, you just don't see them because they're built in.
Hmm. This is a good issue, and I can't comment directly on either the individuals or the firm. I like that you are talking about the expenses, and in fact, in many investment options out there, Carol, the expenses are there. That is true. You don't see them because they are built in. And people say, well, I'm not paying for this. Why do I care about it? Well, what happens is, let's say you're in an investment that makes a gross return of 6%, but there's a 1% internal expense of that. Well, you'll only net out 5% on that. Now, if you're aware of that, you're cognizant of it, and you're okay with it, that's great. But if you're not, then if you're not comfortable with it, then you should choose different investments for it. And in terms of picking an advisor, the expenses are very important, and it's one way you can measure the cost of doing business with someone. But a couple of the things I would rather have you look at, or at least look at along with that, and one is, does this particular advisor specialize in your situation and what you're trying to do? The second thing is, does the advisor have the ability to address other issues in your life beyond just, particular investments? Can you go to that person with questions about, should I pay my mortgage off, or what kind of life insurance should I have? Someone who offers at least some guidance and suggestions on other things beyond just investing, probably going to give more people more satisfaction than someone who just focuses on stocks and bonds and nothing else, because it really is all part of the big picture is taxes and interest and insurance all can affect your overall happiness financially. So I would Rather have you look at someone who is going to help you with your specific situation and has some expertise in it, and then also can give you some guidance on the other issues you have in your life.
Okay, that's good.
All right. Thank you very much, Carol. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, and this is On Your Money. Coming up, we'll talk some about the financial impact of Hurricane Sandy, and Kevin will answer more of your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network. This is an Election Day edition of On Your Money. Coming up tonight, it's election coverage, election results coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio. And tomorrow morning, all morning long, we'll have lots of discussion on the results and hear from a wide variety of guests from 6 until 9 tomorrow morning here on the Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine talking with financial planner Kevin McKinley about personal finance issues. We'll get to more of your calls in just a moment, but let's talk a little bit about the financial impact of Superstorm Sandy. It really was a superstorm. Cleanup continues. Relief efforts continue. Power seems to be being restored to many of the those affected by Hurricane Sandy. But Kevin, what kind of an impact is this storm going to have on our pocketbooks?
Well, it's going to have some broad effects, obviously, in the economy and where money goes and comes from, but it's also going to have some narrow effects on all of us, especially in the areas of charitable giving and insurance, and even those of us who are thinking about buying a used car in the next year or two will be affected by it as well.
So how is this going to affect charitable giving?
When you have more money and you have a very emotional situation, something that pulls on the heartstrings like this, you have more potential for problems. The Wisconsin Department of Financial Institutions issued a warning to people, and they said, watch out now for people trying to take advantage of you with cold calls, soliciting donations. Definitely don't give your credit card number over the phone to anybody who has contacted you directly. And also watch out for investments related to this, people soliciting investments in, you know, Sandy recovery efforts or whatever, and watch out for Facebook page solicitations as well. Say, hey, I'm raising money for this. Instead of, you know, giving money to someone who contacts you, go directly to the Red Cross or another sanctioned organization and donate the money directly to them.
Will, do you think this disaster is going to raise the cost of homeowners insurance?
Yeah, every time we've seen this kind of big hit, especially on a financial basis, you see higher rates come to homeowners insurance policies, and especially in this time because, as we've heard during this hour, very low interest rates mean that insurance companies don't make as much money on premiums invested as they once did, and therefore they have to raise premiums to offset these kinds of claims. So you might want to review your homeowners insurance policy right now to make sure you have the right coverage and you have the best possible coverage for your specific situation at the best price. While you're doing that, you might want to think about adding flood insurance. Many millions of people on the East Coast did not have flood insurance, and many people do not know that your homeowner's policy probably does not cover flooding. And you have to purchase a separate policy to cover flooding, and most of those people didn't have it. Now, there is a government backstop program for those people, but that is probably going to be drained by all of the issues here. So you want to get your own policy. Go to floodsmart.gov, and you do want to do that now and have it in place because you might not have flooding issues in the next few weeks. But when spring comes, many people have more chances of having some kind of water damage, and you don't want to find out at that point. The flood insurance does take a few weeks to get, and so you want to look into it now before you actually need it.
And why do you say that buyers of used cars should beware?
Many of those B-roll film clips we saw of a Honda Accord sitting there with water up past the rearview mirror, those vehicles are going to be dried out and in some cases shipped around the country, scrubbed clean, if you will, but then sold. And water-damaged vehicles have been a big problem with previous water disasters being spread around the country. And this is a situation where it really is buyer beware. You don't have a lot of recourse. And so if you are going to buy a used car, especially one in the next year or two, you definitely want to have it taken to a mechanic who can not only look it over, but see if there has been some kind of flood damage to it as well. It might cost you $50, but it could save you several thousand dollars down the road.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that even a reputable car dealership would not know if this had been involved in a flood?
Absolutely. It's very difficult for them, and especially one, you know, moves from one auction to the other, or it's a trade-in, and there's several different, might pass through several different hands. And even, you know, a dealer who wants to make sure they're putting good vehicles on the lot might not be able to tell if there has been water damage to that vehicle. And again, it's the buyer's responsibility to make sure that they're not getting stuck with one of those.
I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, Managing Member of McKinley Money, LLC. Here to talk with you on your money. If you have a question for him, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. To more of your calls now, and Chris in Fond du Lac is with us next. Hello, Chris.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Kevin, I just had a question. I've been looking at buying a house, and I've been having an issue with credit score and securing financing. And I recently just took a new job. I'm about 8 months into it. I have more than enough for a 20% down payment, but I've been running into issues with getting financing based on the credit score. And what they're telling me is that I need to open up more credit accounts, such as credit cards, and also secure employment for at least 12 months. Is there anything else that I can do to improve my credit score for the short term?
No, good for you, Kristen. And it's a sad problem, and it sounds like in your case you've been almost too responsible with your money, and it's hurt your credit score. Credit scores, in some sense, do portray the user in terms of how likely they are going to pay the money back to the lender. But there also is some indication in there as to how profitable the customer will be for the lender as well. And since you haven't taken on a lot of debt, apparently you probably won't be as profitable to the lender, so you're not going to be, at least on a credit score basis, quite as interesting as someone who does carry some balance and pays a little bit of interest. So have you tried to get a credit card, Chris?
Yeah, actually I opened up a credit card about 4 months ago, and that's the first credit card I ever had. And that was actually through the financial institution I do my banking with. But they said in addition to that, you have to open up a line of credit that's through a national account, such as like Kohl's or Walmart or Target, things like that.
Sure, you can do that, and that's not a bad idea at all. And as long as you have the card open, they want to watch you, if you will, through this credit scoring process and watch you use credit responsibly. So you might want to, you know, for better for worse, and especially since this is a big purchase, it's probably worth it. But get that type of account. Get the card, charge something up the next time you buy it, and then pay it off right away. Charge it up again, pay it off right away. Try not to carry a balance because you don't want the interest cost for a while, and you'll see your score go up pretty well. The good and the bad news about buying a house right now, Chris, is that the score and the numbers that go into the software program at the mortgage lender's office are everything. You could be convicted of embezzlement, and if your credit score is good, you're going to get a mortgage. And if you could win the lottery, and if your credit score is not good, you're not going to get the mortgage. So that really is going to dictate everything about it. And, you know, it's a good time to be building up your credit score right now, because there'll probably be more homes on the market in the next few months after the first of the year. So you might see some other place out there that might even be more attractive to you once you finally do get your credit score up. But you're doing the exact right thing. Just use some of the credit and then pay it off right away.
Thanks, Chris, and good luck. Paula in Rhinelander is with us next. Hello, Paula.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
I have a question for Kevin. As a widow, it's my understanding that I can retire at the age of 60 and draw from my husband's Social Security, 82.5%. And then that keeps mine fully intact until my full retirement age of 66, and then I can draw at 100% of mine. Is that correct?
It can be correct. Have you confirmed this with the Social Security Administration office?
I did go in and ask them that, and, you know, that's basically what they told me. But I have a friend somewhat in the same situation, a little bit older, though. She's in her 60s, and they told her if she, you know, drew her husband's at whatever percentage, that's all she would get from hers, too, is that percentage.
Yeah, and that you may both be right. Without going into the particular numbers, Paula, it can definitely vary according to each person's situation. There are rules in place that apply to everyone, but the bad news is that there are very subtle little differences in terms of earnings and numbers that can change the amounts available. But I would definitely go on what the good people at the SSA say, and that can be a good way to it really what happens is, to help you understand a little better, and for the listeners as well, there's not a target of specific dollars in many cases. It's more towards getting you everything you're entitled to for Social Security. And so sometimes you might look at something and say, well, I can get more this way or that way. But what the Social Security Administration system does is says, we're trying to get you as much as possible, either now or later, but up to only a certain limit. So that's why you might be having a different experience with this than what your friend did.
Oh, okay.
And you don't have to retire to initiate Social Security, just so you know.
Thank you, Paula, and good luck to you. Hal in Eau Claire is with us next. Hello, Hal.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, Hal.
I have a mortgage, and I'd like to retire like 8.5 years. Mm-hmm. Should we pay that off, or can I do other stuff and invest otherwise? And
So you're saying, should you pay your mortgage off, or should you use your money and put it in the bank or the stock market or something, right?
Well, I think I'd buy another rental property.
Do you have experience with that, Hal?
Yep.
Okay. Actually, if it were me and you have experience with it, I would lean towards a rental property. One of the things that's probably going to happen, you know, we've received a little bit of an uptick in the housing market here, but going forward, people are going to be a little less likely to buy homes and get mortgages and live in them for 30 years, and therefore the rental market, if you're comfortable with it, might not be a bad place for that investment. And the rental properties, as you probably know, Hal, are a good way to get rich on a very, very, very long time frame. But that's not a bad idea. Even if you do decide you're going to pay the mortgage off, and I don't, you know, if you have a lot of other excess assets, I wouldn't mind that. I'd still want you to have a home equity line of credit established for as much as the lender will allow, so that if sometime in the future you do actually need that money and you have that, the HELOC established, you may be able to tap it in an emergency.
All right, Hal. Good luck to you. Judith in Milwaukee will be our last caller. Hi, Judith.
Hi. I'm hoping that Kevin can recommend an internet resource that would have information with some options on socially responsible index funds. I'm hoping to gradually shift my conventional investments in my IRA, which is all in various mutual funds, into something that I feel more comfortable with. So funds that are, I guess, just socially responsible is kind of the overall umbrella term.
Sure. I would, I'd start at ussif.org, ussif.org, and we'll put that website up at onyourmoney.com, and they have a couple tools there. That's the Forum for Sustainable and Responsible Investment, and they have you can not only find investing professionals who specialize in that, but you can also look at different publications that have different types of funds where you can use and you can screen it, et cetera. So that's a good place to start. And then also keep in mind that one person's version of socially responsible is different from another. So make sure that you are screening for your specific facts rather than, you know, just accepting socially responsible as a be-all, end-all of consciously investing your money.
Okay, Judith, thanks for the call. Time now, Kevin, for the website of the week.
Yeah, we mentioned about used vehicles, and I'd like it noted, Joy, that in deference to the dire nature of Superstorm Sandy, I did not say something about used vehicles flooding the market in a sign
Thank
of
you
ma-
for that
maturity
very much.
On my part. Go to vehiclehistory.gov to help search for the VIN number of a particular vehicle that you might be looking at and see if you can find the history. That's a government-sponsored website, vehiclehistory.gov, and we'll have a link to that website at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
And four more words before we go.
Spend less, have more.
Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, Managing Member of McKinley Money, LLC. He'll be back next week with another edition of On Your Money. Thanks very much to Bill Martins and to Amanda Magnus for producing this program. Thanks to Rob Ferret and Cynthia Schuster, who also produce these programs. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. It is Election Day. We will have election night coverage tonight on Wisconsin Public Radio. Starting at 8 o'clock, the Wisconsin Public Radio crew will be in, Sean Johnson and also Wisconsin Public Television's Frederica Freiberg. You'll hear results from key races, candidate interviews, and much more. That's tonight starting at 8. And then election results discussed all morning long tomorrow on The Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.